It's Tuned To Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden age. Welcome, I'm your host Mark Livonier. In this hour, horror. Later on, we hear My Love is a Ghost on the series The Chase, but right now, a tale from famous author Ambrose Bierce on The Weird Circle. It's called The Middle Toe of the Right Foot, broadcast on May 21st, 1944.
All over and the house rotting away?
Yeah.
Do you think anyone will show up to claim it tomorrow?
Gertrude Manton's brother's been notified. That house has been empty now for 10 years.
You think Manton will show up?
I wish he would. Manton killed his wife and children there.
Well, what happened to this fellow Manton?
I don't know. Never found a trace of him yet.
And you, a deputy sheriff? Better shine up your badge and get busy.
Well, I'll find the murderer someday. Somehow.
Well, no wonder the ghosts live there. It gives me the creeps. Look, even the trees are all leaning to windward, trying to get away. Come on, let's drive on.
All right. Come on. Yeah, Rosser will be waiting at the hotel. We better get along.
Why don't you look where you're going?
Why, I'm sorry. I was only...
Now get out of my way. Some people are the clumsiest. Clerk.
Good day, sir.
I want a room.
Yes, sir. Gladly. Will you sign the register? Front! You will have room 212, Mr. Grossmith.
Oh, Mr. Grossmith, I think we've met, sir.
What?
A bumping acquaintance in the screen door just now.
Well.
Allow me to introduce myself. Ross, sir, editor of the Marshall Advocate. Glad to welcome you to our city. Are you here on business?
If I am, it's my own business.
My mistake, stranger. What a horned toad.
Rosser, here we are.
Hello, King. Oh, you must be Mr. Sanchez.
Yes, sir.
How do you do, sir? Welcome to Marshall.
It's good of you to meet us here, Mr. Rosser. We county politicians, like the deputy here and myself, can't get along without you great men of the press.
Oh, shucks. Come on over here and sit down.
That's right.
Now, you want to talk about the Manton house first or the coroner?
Oh, wait a minute. First, let's order something long and cold, huh? The Manton place will take care of itself.
It's a good idea. That was a hot drive. Well, now, about this candidate for coroner, Rosser.
I can't see, King, why a man can't be a good coroner just because he's got a cast in his eye.
Well, you know, Rosser, I have a theory that any physical defect goes with some mental or moral defect. Just can't help myself. I hate and always hated any kind of deformity in a man. Or in a woman.
I infer then, Mr. King, that a lady lacking the advantage of a nose would find it a hard struggle to become Mrs. Thomas King.
Well, put it that way if you want, but seriously, I once nearly married a most charming girl who... Well, I was a kid lawyer studying at Harrison. Each time I came home here, I rushed over to the Brewers. I think I was really in love with Gertrude Brewer. She was lovely. Then, one summer afternoon, we were in the orchard. Her young brother was helping us gather fruit.
Oh, Tom, it's such fun to have you home. Even if for only these short visits. How's everything?
Oh, just fine and dandy. Oh, I've so much to tell you. They made me deputy sheriff.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah. Can't I see you alone this evening? Let's walk down by the river.
Oh, I'd love to, Tom.
Yes.
What is it, Ned?
Here comes Manton. He's tying up his team down by the gate.
Oh, Gertrude, I can't stand that man. Why do you let him come here?
Why, he's very amusing, Tom. And very nice.
He's very prosperous. But I agree with Tom, sis. He's a queer duck. Got queer ways.
Well, Ned, what do you mean?
Well, I went after Partridge with him, and he uses the craziest contraption.
Yeah? How's that?
He's taken a long, straight branch, stripped it, and on the end he's fastened a loop of wire that's sharp as a razor blade.
A razor blade?
Yeah. He sneaks up on a bird, then gets the loop over its head, and gives a quick jerk. And presto, bird's dead. Throat cut.
Mm. Oh, Ned, why does he do that?
Well, there's no shot to scare other birds.
Well, that's true, and a good idea if you want slaughter instead of sport.
And when he's doing it, Tom, his eyes look so queer.
Uh-oh, Ned, here he comes. But I'll see you alone tonight, won't I, Gertrude, dear?
Yes, Tom, of course.
Afternoon, Miss Gertrude.
Hello, Mr. Madden.
Just thought I'd stop by to see the prettiest peach in the county.
Oh.
Hello, Ned, my boy.
Howdy, Mr. Manton.
Why, Mr. Manton, look. Your hands are stained.
Oh. Oh, well, I'm sorry, Miss Gertrude. I've been doing a pretty job of butchering. Finest calves you ever saw.
Oh. This is our friend, Tom King. He's been made deputy sheriff.
Oh, good old law and order. Well, howdy.
Don't you ever take your cattle to market on the hoof?
I'll prefer it my way. Besides, it makes for tenderer, whiter veal. Well, young woman, you look mighty near perfect today.
Mighty near? I think Gertrude looks perfect always.
Well said, young sheriff. I guess by and large that everyone will agree that Miss Brewer here is an absolutely perfect specimen. No flaws, no faults.
Now stop it, both of you.
Well, as her brother, I'll say she's easy on the eyes. But a perfect specimen? Ha ha. No, she isn't.
Now, Ned, behave.
Ned, what are you talking about?
Yeah, you tell him, sis.
Oh, the boy's crazy. What's he driving at?
Well, it's all so silly. I don't know why Ned mentioned it. But the fact is, if you must know, I have only four toes on my right foot. No middle toe.
What?
Cut off by accident?
No, I was born that way.
Oh, a branded filly, eh? Well, you'll never stray from your owner, will you?
Gertrude, I never knew that.
Why, it's of no importance, Tom. I never think of it.
It's cool here under the trees. Mind if I sit on the bench?
Oh, not at all, Mr. Manton. Here, I'll make room.
Take my chair, Manton. I'll be running along.
Oh, Tom, already?
Yes, I've got some business in town. Important, really. You'll excuse me, Gertrude. So long, Ned.
Forgetting me, eh?
No. Goodbye, Mr. Manton.
Oh, see you tonight, Tom. Goodbye for a little while.
Well, gentlemen, I didn't go back that night, and that goodbye was not for a little while, but for a long time.
Do you mean a defect in the young woman's foot made such a difference to you, King?
Yes. It's a curious obsession on my part, but I know that if I'd married that girl, I should have been miserable and would have made her so.
And if the girl cared for you...
She couldn't have cared too much for King, for she soon married a gentleman with more normal views.
You mean Manton? I get it. That horrible house we passed the day. But you said Manton killed his wife.
Yes, he did. Hey, wait a minute. Well, who's that coming out of the door? It's familiar looking. Oh, but it couldn't be.
His name's Grossmith.
Grossmith, huh?
Yeah. A cheerful bounder if I ever met one. Nearly knocked me down when he arrived this afternoon.
Hmm.
Bit my ear off when I tried to speak to him.
Well, no interview?
No interview. What a nerve. He's sitting down right near us.
Well, I'm interested in this story of King's. Tell me more about the Manton case, King.
Your friend seems to be choking.
Let him choke. Go on, King.
Well, there's not much more to tell. I spent several years in the county seat before I came back here. The next time I saw Gertrude Manton was one day 10 years ago. I was in my office when I heard a knock on the door. Come in.
Tom, it's I, Gertrude Brewer, Gertrude Manton.
Gertrude! Oh, it's good to see you again. Why, you look...
Don't try to be polite. I look old and tired and scared, and I am.
Well, what is it? Here, sit down and tell me. Tell me how I can help you.
Will you help? Ned's away, and I'm in such trouble.
Well, I've heard gossip that things aren't going so well at the farm.
They're not. It's awful. There are no more cattle.
No more cattle? Well, in heaven's name, why?
My husband's killed them all. He cuts their throats.
Oh.
It's just sort of a passion with him. There were no more calves, so he killed our bull. Then he started on the cows. Our lovely, gentle cows. Every so often, my husband's eyes get a strange, glassy look in them. He whets his slaughtering knife and sort of fingers it. with an awful smile on his lips. Hmm. Tommy's crazy. He ought to be put away, but... what must I do?
Oh, now, now, Gertrude, dear, of course I'll help you. Take it easy. Now, don't cry.
I won't, but... Tom, he cut the throat of our last cow yesterday. I'm so frightened. It's having a terrible effect on the children.
Now, now, see here. Everything will come out all right. Please stop crying. I'm going to get Dr. Carter, and we'll drive out first thing in the morning.
You will?
Yes.
Oh, that's wonderful. I won't be afraid anymore. Thank you, Tom. Well, see you tomorrow morning, then. Goodbye.
It's good of you, Dr. Carter, to drive out here. Miss Manton's an old friend of mine.
Well, she's a fine woman, Tom. Oh, but that husband.
Yeah. Doc, I want you to look him over. There's something very wrong.
Oh, Nellie. Oh. Oh. Oh, lovely sunshine. A lovely day out. What a gloomy place this is.
Hello, Gertrude. Gertrude! She doesn't answer.
Well, let's ring or knock or something.
I'll try the bell.
Look here, Tom. The door's open.
Hmm. Now, go on in. Gertrude, where are you?
This house has the emptiest feeling. Are you sure she knew we were coming?
Well, we arranged it only yesterday. Oh, she must be here.
There's no one in this room.
Hmm. Well, let's go upstairs.
Yes, you'd better. Come on.
Doc! Doc, wait! Look, here on the stairs. This stain. It's sticky.
Hmm. That's blood. Dripping from... Hurry, Tom. Hurry up here. Good Lord. Little boy lying by the banister.
Oh. His throat is cut. Gertrude! Gertrude! Where the devil is she? Door.
Tom, in here. It's Mrs. Manton, lying across the body of her little girl. Both their throats slit from ear to ear.
Well, that's the story of the Manton murders, and a morning I'll never forget.
Well, I don't wonder. It's a horrible story. Tom, you may be interested to know that this Grossmith, or whatever his name is, sitting near us here, has been glaring at you and taking in every word you said.
Why the impudence? What do you think we ought to do about it?
That's easy. Sir, I think it would be better if you'd remove yourself to the other end of the veranda. You are evidently not used to the company of gentlemen.
I'll not be spoken to that way.
Why, you ill-bred lout. You've listened to every word we've been saying.
Now, easy, Rossi. You're a bit hasty and unjust. This gentleman's done nothing to deserve such language.
I'll not take back a word. This man has been annoying me all day.
Hold that tongue of yours, sir, and I'll cut it out.
You will you?
It's the custom of the country to demand satisfaction for an unwarranted blow. I now demand it of you.
I'll give it gladly.
I have no acquaintance in this place. Perhaps you, sir, will be kind enough to represent me in this matter.
You mean me? Well, I don't especially like your manner or your manners, but I suppose I shall have to consent. My name is Sancher. Yours is Grossmith, I believe.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Sancher.
And you, King, will act for me, of course. What's the matter? What are you staring at?
He's looking at me, and I find it most objectionable. Why do you look at me like that, Mr. King?
I find you very interesting, sir. You're giving me an idea.
Oh, I've had quite enough of this. Get on with the arrangements, Mr. Sancher.
Very well, sir. I'll toss a coin. As challenger, Mr. Grossmith has first call. If he wins, he may choose either the weapons to be used or the spot where the affair is to take place.
Right. Satisfactory, gentlemen.
Toss the coin.
Here goes. What do you say, Grossmith?
Heads.
Heads it is.
Then I've got my choice of weapons.
Yes. What do you want, guns?
Certainly not. Knives. Boy knives, and I insist that it be a duel in the dark with knives.
Knives? I thought so. You like knives, don't you, Mr. Grossman?
Now hold it, Tom. It's up to Rosser to say where this duel's to be.
Well, I...
I'll speak for you, Rosser. As your second, it is my privilege to make the arrangements.
All right with me, King.
Well, then, gentlemen, meet me here in 3 hours.
Right.
It'll be dark then, and I shall drive you to the place I have chosen for this strange encounter.
Mr. Sancho, I depend on you to buy the longest knives you can find in this town. I'll be here at 9 o'clock. But for now, I've had enough of you gentlemen's company.
Look here, Tom. What the devil have I got myself into?
A duel. A duel with knives. And, just as he says, in the dark.
But I didn't bargain to get ourselves into a mess like this.
You realize that we have the choice of place, don't you? Well, don't worry. Nothing's going to happen to you, Rosser.
Well, as second to this fellow Grossmith, I must ask you, King, what's your planning? Is it some sort of practical joke?
Not exactly a joke, Sancho.
Well, where is this place you have in mind?
A rather appropriate spot. Remember the haunted house I showed you today?
You mean where the Manton murders were?
Exactly. It will be the most perfect setting. And now, if you and Rosser will only help me carry out my plan tonight when we get to that Manton house, this is what will happen.
All right, here we are.
Come on. Get out, Grossmith. This is the place. What are you waiting for?
I happen this is a trick.
Well, of course, Mr. Grossmith, if you're afraid of spooks... Why...
I'm afraid of nothing. I'm coming.
The choice of place for this duel was ours, Mr. Grossmith, and we have chosen this house. Go in, please.
Boy, it's dark as Hades.
Well, here, wait a minute. I got a candle. I'll light it. There. That's better. Now, here's the room.
The dust is a foot thick.
Yeah, these infernal cobwebs. They're like rotting cheesecloth.
Come, gentlemen, I'll hold the candle high so you can look into the room. It is large and square, as you see. No fireplace, no furniture. Only this door and two windows, which are boarded up. It will be utterly dark. Mr. Sancho, is everything all right?
I think the gentlemen should remove their hats, coats, and vests.
All right, but I don't see the sense to it.
Shall we leave them here in the passage?
Yes.
Very well.
And now, gentlemen, here are the knives. They are exactly alike. You may examine them by the candlelight, and while you do so, I shall search you, Mr. Rosser. Nothing. Now, let me hold the candle, King, while you search my principal.
Right. Well, I'm satisfied. Well, Sancho, I think we're ready. If it is agreeable to you, Mr. Grossmith, will you place yourself in that corner, the one farthest from this doorway?
Well, I can't see a thing.
Feel your way along the wall. And now, Rosser, you here in this corner nearest the door.
Right.
Now, gentlemen, you are both in position. Remember, you are not to start fighting or move until you hear the closing of the outer door. I shall now blow out the candle. There. There is the darkness you ask for, Grossmith. We leave you now. Good luck, Rosser. Goodbye, Mr. Grossmith.
Are you with us, Rosser? Right behind you. Then here goes the outer door.
All right, Rosser. Come out of that corner. My knife is waiting for you. My knife. I love a knife. I'll carve you up, you blackguard. Well, why don't you say something? Rosser, where are you? Come out of that corner. Very well, I'll get you. You sniveling fool, are you afraid? Oh, a corner. But I'm getting nearer to you, Rosser. Why don't you move? The door. Now. There's no one here. Rosser, where are you? I'll get you. Rosser,
or footsteps. He's not in here. By heaven, I've been tricked. I'm alone. Alone in this house. What's that? Oh, I'm cold. It's getting cold in here. Oh. Oh, that glow of light. And who's there? No! You! You, not you! Not all three of you. No. Oh, go away from me. Stop! Don't come any nearer. No!
Come in.
What's the big idea of sending for me so early in the morning? Oh, hello, Sanchez.
Hello.
Did he get you here, too?
Yes, he did. Well, Tom, what is it you want?
Boys, that hoax we framed up last night doesn't look so good this morning.
What do you mean?
It's got me in a spot. You see, there's something about that fellow Grossmith I didn't tell you in Sancher. I drove right back to the house after I left you boys last night, and though I called and yelled at him, there wasn't a sound. He wasn't there. And he didn't come back to the hotel.
Well, what do you care? I never want to see the fellow again.
But I've got to find him.
Well,
I never should have let him get away.
Just what do you mean by that, Tom?
Well, I mean just this. When Grossmith challenged you, I thought I recognized him. Yeah. That fellow isn't Grossmith at all.
Huh?
He really is...
Hello, Tom. I guess I'm early.
Ned Brewer. Well, I didn't expect you here this early.
Well, I got tired waiting for you and the county commissioner.
I'm glad to see you again, Ned. You know Sam Rosser, the advocate?
Of course. How do you do?
Welcome back, Ned.
And this is the commissioner, Mr. Sancher.
Glad to meet you, sir.
How do you do?
I'm Gertrude Manton's brother.
I guess so. Well, Mr. Brewer, the county will be glad to give over the custody of the farm, and since you're here, we might as well drive right out there and get the business over with. What do you say, Tom?
Sure. I'd like it mighty well if Rosser here came along as a witness. Well,
why not?
Of course. Make a good feature story for my paper. But I bet it'll bring back powerful, unpleasant memories to you, Brewer, to see that Manton place again.
I wish I didn't have to come out here. This place drives me crazy. Such ghastly recollections. I can't ever forget that day.
No, nor can I, Ned. It was stark horror. Unbelievable. Poor Gertrude.
What happens now, Mr. Sancher?
Well, we wait here till noon.
It's nearly that now.
Good.
And then, if no other claimant puts in an appearance, the state law says I hand the custody of the place over to you as the rightful heir.
I don't know what I'll do with the place. I certainly never want to see it again.
Now, let's go inside.
The door's unlocked. Well, there's nothing here for anyone to take anyway. Gloomy, isn't it?
What a ghostly effect, that light filtering down from the upstairs windows.
I remember this room to the right here. I thought so. It's empty. Wait! Come here, quick!
Huh? What? What is it?
What's in that far corner? I think it's a man.
It must be Grossmith.
Hey, you! Hey, Tom, wait. This man's dead. Stone dead.
Why, he can't be. Rosser, kick out some of those boards so we can get some light in here.
Right. I'll help you, Rosser.
All right.
He's been dead for some time. He's rigid.
There's his knife on the floor. But, well, there's no blood on it.
Look at his hands. Palms out and those claw-like fingers shielding his face.
There's not a mark on him. See if you can help me lower his arm.
Certainly. There. Look at those wild, staring eyes and that half-open mouth. Can you figure out why he died, Tom?
This man died of sheer terror. Don't you agree, Ned? Why, Ned, what's the matter?
By heaven, Tom. It's Manton. Look, you saw him once at our place, didn't you?
Yes, but he wore a beard then and long hair. But you're right. This is Manton.
Manton? Grossmith was Manton? Tom, Brewer, do you see what I think I see in the thick dust?
Where? What?
There on the floor. Leading from the door straight across the room to within a yard of Manton's body.
Footprints. Bare feet. Three parallel lines of them. This is awful.
A woman's footprints in the center, and on either side, the marks of children's feet.
Look at that. This nearest print of the woman's foot. The middle toe is missing.
The middle toe of the right foot.
Gertrude. My sister Gertrude.
Thank you. the past, we have brought you the story, The Middle Toe of the Right Foot. Bellkeeper, pull the bell.
The Weird Circle, on Tuned to Yesterday, a broadcast from May 21st, 1944. The author Ambrose Bierce, known not only for his great short stories, but also his quotes. One apt for this hour, him saying there are four kinds of homicide: felonious, excusable, justifiable, and praiseworthy. This from a man who was also quoted as saying that a quotation means the act of repeating erroneously the words of another. You're listening to an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and now on to The Chase, an NBC broadcast from November 16, 1952, featuring former Inner Sanctum host Paul McGrath in the play My Love is a Ghost.
National Broadcasting Company invites you by transcription to join The Chase. There is always the hunter and the hunted, the pursuer and the pursued. It may be the voice of authority or a race with death and destruction, the most relentless of the hunters. There are times when laughter is heard as counterpoint and moments when sheer terror is the theme. Always there is the chase. And where can we run to when we are being pursued by a phantom? Have you ever been chased by a ghost? No, don't laugh, please. This isn't a joke. And it isn't an old wives' tale told by the light of the moon. It's real. It happened to me. By profession, I'm an art dealer, as you probably know. I dare say you've dropped into the John Crawford galleries once or twice, and if your purse was large enough, you may have purchased one of my many masterpieces. I mention my profession because it's unalterably linked with this story. For if an oil painting in a Third Avenue curiosity shop hadn't caught my eye one afternoon, I wouldn't be trying to rescue now what little is left of my sanity.
May I help you, sir?
Yes, are you the owner here?
I am, sir. Perkins is my name.
Well, you have a painting in your window, an oil. Young woman with long blonde hair. May I see it, please?
Just a moment, sir.
Thank you.
The frame is an old one, but I can have it refinished for you.
No, I'm not interested in the frame.
But you like the picture, eh?
Yes, I like... Oh, it's not a Romney, after all.
A Romney, sir? If this were a Romney, I assure you I wouldn't have it displayed in a dusty window.
You seem to know a little something about art.
I do, sir.
Well, my name's John Crawford.
The collector? Well, I've heard of you, sir.
Thanks. What is the artist's name, Mr. Perkins?
Oh, it's Ahab.
Ahab? An Englishman?
Why, I don't know, sir. The woman in the portrait is very attractive, isn't she? Mm-hmm. Judging by her dress, she must have lived perhaps 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm. What's she holding in her hand?
Oh, it appears to be a small perfume bottle, Mr. Crawford. I've looked at the inscription on the label through a glass. It seems to spell jasmine.
Mm. Really not a very good piece of art. I mean, his colors are all right, but the line...
If you're interested, Mr. Crawford, I'll sell it you cheap. $200, and it's yours.
$200 for this? You take me for an idiot?
Then name your own price. I'd like to get rid of it if I can.
Why?
I can't explain. You couldn't possibly understand. It's just that ever since I acquired this painting at an auction, I've had the feeling of being followed.
Of being followed?
Not any particular person. I just... You'll have to forgive a foolish old man and a rather superstitious one, I'm afraid.
It's her eyes that fascinate me. I've never seen fear in the eyes done so well.
Why, frankly, I'm sorry I ever acquired this thing in the first place.
Oh, are you? Oh, very well, then. I'll take it off your hands for $100, and I don't have time to haggle.
It's yours.
You can send the receipt to my gallery.
Thank you, Mr. Crawford, and good day.
Good day.
Is anything wrong, Mr. Crawford? Wrong? You seem to have been startled by something.
Well, just my imagination. You didn't smell it, did you?
Smell what, Mr. Crawford?
The odor, perfume. I thought for a moment that I could detect it in this room. And the perfume was jasmine. Coincidences are rare in my life, but it was on that very night that my wife Edna got another one of her silly ideas. Edna's actually a marvelous woman. We've been married 12 years. Edna's an intelligent woman with a wonderful sense of humor, but like all women, she occasionally goes in for fads. And on the day I bought the painting, she'd returned home with something new.
But, John, it should be such fun.
Oh, Edna. Darling, the whole idea is ridiculous, and it bores me. Say, nonsense. Well, that sort of nonsense went out with hoop skirts.
You don't believe in the supernatural?
Of course not. You?
Perhaps.
Edna, there are no such things as ghosts. When people die, they don't come back.
Prove it to me by coming to the seance. They say the Swami's marvelous.
The Swami?
Oh, please, darling, be a good sport.
Oh, all right. The seance was held in the back room of a small midtown flat. And there were about six or eight people in the company when we arrived. We were seated in a sort of a semicircle. And then the Swami entered. A tall, thin Indian in a turban with protruding cheekbones and a mask-like face. He regarded his guests with amusement for a moment and then began to speak.
There are some of you here who are skeptics. There always are. But whether you prefer to believe the truth or not, I am prepared to demonstrate that the spirits of the dead can return in one form or another. Santa, the lights, please.
Oh, your God.
And now, your absolute concentration and indulgence for a few moments while I try to establish a bridge to the hereafter.
He sat in his chair and closed his eyes, and from somewhere in the room we heard music. It was completely dark at first, but as my eyes grew accustomed to the gloom, I could see his body sway, and a moan escaped from his lips. Then he began a mumbo-jumbo in a voice that was strange and high-pitched. And for the life of me, I couldn't help feeling a momentary wave of revulsion and cold fear.
Yes. Who? Yes. Through me. We are waiting. We are... Yes.
For a moment, I thought he was strangling. Then the mumbo-jumbo stopped, and there was silence. It was broken only by the sound of a feminine voice.
Ahab. I want Ahab. It is Ariane calling. My darling, even with blood on your hands, I love you so. Ahab, you are here. I see you, Ahab, and I caress you.
No! No, do you hear that? Where are the lights? The lights! Put them on!
Yes, the outburst was from me, and it almost created a riot. Instantly, the place was in an uproar. A woman fainted when the room was illuminated. I saw the Swami writhing on the floor as if in some horrible agony. A moment later, his face grew calm, and he opened his eyes, but I was already on my way out of that confounded room with Edna in tow. Oh, it's good to get a breath of fresh air again.
Really, John, your behavior was unpardonable.
Edna, I actually felt something in that room, something cold.
John, what are you talking about?
When I tell you this, darling, you may think I'm crazy, but I swear that that's how it felt.
How? What felt?
The kiss. For a moment, there were two lips pressed against mine. And yet, they weren't lips. They weren't flesh and blood at all. They were...
John, now, let's go home. Oh, you're tired, darling, and I'm sorry I dragged you to that silly seance. We'll get some sleep.
Yes. Very good suggestion. Let's get some sleep.
John?
Hmm?
Oh, is that the new picture?
Mm-hmm. I just acquired it yesterday.
Oh, that's rather good. Who's the artist?
A chap named... Ahab. Never heard of him, but the portrait appealed to me.
Did you say Ahab?
Yes.
that the name?
Mentioned by that woman's voice at the séance? Yes.
But what does it mean?
What does what mean?
The coincidence.
Not a coincidence, Edna. There's a connection. There must be. Perhaps the voice at the séance belonged to this girl with the golden hair.
You made fun of me for having some belief in the supernatural, John, but now you're going even farther than I did.
I know, darling. It's asinine. Forget it, will you, Edna? The entire thing is undoubtedly a fraud.
She's very lovely, the girl in your painting.
You think so?
Yes.
But she's not quite my type. I imagine she's been dead for over 100...
What's the trouble, John?
I don't quite know.
John, are you sure you've been feeling well these past few days?
Quiet, Edna. Did you smell anything odd just then?
Odd?
Yes. The odor of jasmine.
No.
There it is again. It's unmistakable. Edna.
John.
Come out of this room quickly.
Why are you locking the door?
Locking? Yeah, well, that's silly, isn't it?
John, you're not yourself. Something's troubling you. That seance.
Let's not talk about the seance, Edna.
Very well, if you don't want to.
Edna, let's go south for a few weeks.
South?
Yes, the season hasn't started yet. Palm Beach shouldn't be too crowded. Look, we can even go to Havana for a while and have a bit of relaxation. Huh? We missed out on the summer vacation. Let's make up for it now.
I've been trying to get you to take a few weeks off for almost a year. Havana should be wonderful fun. We can leave next week.
No, not next week, Edna.
No? Well, then when? Oh, now, John, just a moment. Put that phone down, please.
Edna!
John! What are you running away from?
Running away?
You act as though something or someone has frightened you. I don't understand it, and it worries me.
All right, be difficult. Just for old time's sake.
All right, darling. I'll pack a few things, and we'll be on our way.
I couldn't tell her that she was right and that I was running away from something. But what? Then it was just an unbridled feeling of wanting to escape. I didn't realize that my pursuer would follow me to the ends of the earth and that the chase would have no finish. Well, once on the midnight plane, Edna fell right to sleep. I read a bit, and when the hostess dimmed the plane lights, I walked to the back of the ship for a glass of water. A few moments later, I made my way forward again, but because of the darkness, I settled myself in the wrong place. There were two vacant seats. But when I realized my mistake, started to get up again, I suddenly sensed that although the seat beside me looked empty, it wasn't. For a moment I froze. A hand had touched my arm, a hand I couldn't see. Then the odor of jasmine again, very powerful now, and an icy caress on my throat.
Ahab, Ahab, my love, you will never leave me.
Let me go!
John, what are you doing back here?
Edna.
Oh, John, you're ill.
Help me up, Edna.
Let me ring for the stewardess.
No, don't do that. She's gone.
Who's gone?
The girl, the thing, whatever it was, that tried to kiss me again just now.
John.
It followed me aboard the plane, and it's here. The next stop is Jacksonville. We're getting off this plane.
Getting off?
There's no point in trying to run away any longer, Edna. She'll pursue me wherever I go. Edna.
Yes, John.
I think a ghost has fallen in love with me. Yes. It struck me all at once. The girl, or the phantom, or whatever you want to call her, believed I was a man named Ahab, the man who painted her portrait, because I was certain now she was the woman in my picture. And she was infatuated with me. There was no mistake about it. Her kiss, her caress, though it reminded me of the lips and fingers of a cadaver, was her way of showing affection. Affection, mind you, from a ghost. Was I going completely crazy? But I had a plan. And although Edna had other ideas, I intended to follow it through.
John.
Hmm?
I want to tell you something. I've made an appointment for you.
You have? With whom?
Dr. Richardson.
The psychiatrist?
You must see him at once.
Oh, you think I'm off my trolley, do you?
I think you're on the verge of a nervous breakdown, John. I want to be honest about it. And you know, darling, that no matter what...
Break the appointment, Edna. I'm not crazy and I'm not having a nervous breakdown. I have my own ideas about what all this means, and I'm going to get to the bottom of it myself.
How?
I'm going to do a little research, for one thing. I'm going to find out exactly who this Ahab was, what he looked like, if possible. Oh, there may be some information on his relationship with the girl, Ariane. And if there is... Oh, Edna... Don't look at me so condescendingly. I won't have it.
I didn't mean to.
I'm not a child and I'm not a lunatic, and please leave me alone.
John!
I went to the study, sat down to cool off. My fingers trembled with rage and frustration when I lit a cigarette. And as I inhaled deeply and let the smoke curl out in a steady stream, my body relaxed a little and my nerves began to steady. Then, a moment later, I knew I wasn't alone in the room. It began again as usual, with a smell of jasmine in the air, and this brought drops of perspiration oozing from my skin. I saw the smoke curl lazily above my head and form itself into a hazy figure. And then slowly the face began to appear. It was Ariane's face, the face of the girl in the painting. I gripped the chair to steady myself, then suddenly grew calm. She was calling to me again. And this time, I would answer her.
Ahab. Ahab.
I'm not Ahab.
My beloved.
And I'm not your beloved. Let's be sensible about this.
Ahab.
My name is John. John Crawford. I've no idea at all of why you're chasing me around, but you may as well know right now that it'll get you nowhere.
I love you, Ahab.
But I don't love you. Do you understand that? I don't love you. In the first place, I'm already married. In the second place, I'm probably twice your age. And please don't be impertinent. Now go on about your business and leave me alone.
Kiss me, Ahab.
I said leave me alone.
Kiss me.
No. Let go of me. My throat is strangling me. You're trying to kill me. Get away.
John.
Well,
let me pour you a drink.
I need one.
Here, darling.
Are there marks?
Marks?
On my throat, where she tried to strangle me.
No, there are no marks.
But I tell you, Edna, she... Oh, it's obvious that you don't believe me.
Oh, John.
It's quite all right, Edna. I understand.
When I heard you talking to yourself...
To myself, you... Heard no other voices?
No, dear. If you just...
See, Dr. Richards. I'll see Dr. Richardson on one condition.
Well?
I want a week to do some research. Just 1 week. And if I haven't got an explanation for all this, I'll submit to an examination.
A full week, darling?
Yes, with no questions asked. I want this room locked when I'm out. And we won't bring up the subject again until 1 week from today. Is it a bargain?
Very well, John. Whatever you say. Well, what are you doing with that portrait?
I'm putting it inside this closet.
But why, John?
Because I detest the sight of it. Now to work. First, I'm going to check up on all the art museums. I'll get a line on every artist who ever lived, good, bad, and indifferent. Then I'll check with the central branch of the public library. I may find his name somewhere, and perhaps it'll be linked with Ariane. I think that...
What is it, John?
You didn't hear it?
Hear what?
That laughter. It seemed to come from the closet where I placed that picture.
I didn't hear a thing.
No.
John.
Neither did I. It was obvious. Ariane was audible to me alone. No one else could hear her. But I was getting used to her ridiculous antics now, and I didn't care. I set to work to learn something about her history through the artist Ahab. For a time, I thought I was stymied. Then I ran into a bit of luck. I'd strayed into a legal library, specializing in law books only. And while thumbing through their catalogs, I hit pay dirt. Miss, could you help me for a moment?
What can I do for you, sir?
This card in the catalog, Ahab versus the Crown. What does it mean?
Oh, let me see.
seems to refer to a legal trial during the reign of Queen Victoria, judging by the catalog number.
Where can I find a description of it?
Come with me, sir.
All right.
The book should be on this shelf.
Uh-huh.
Let's see. Here we are. Oh, it's a collection of famous murder trials held during the reign of Queen Victoria.
I see. Thank you.
Is there anything else I can do for you?
No, thanks. You've been very helpful. This is what I want. Yes, this is precisely what I want. I sat down at the table to read the account, but as I turned the pages, I seemed to feel that I was being interfered with in some way. I was intent on getting to the proper place in the book, and it wasn't until I'd reached it that I thought I saw the chair right beside me move. The empty chair. As though someone or something had just sat down to read the account over my shoulder. So, you followed me again? Don't pretend you haven't. Don't pretend you aren't there. I can smell that nauseating odor of jasmine clearly. All right, sit there and watch me. I'm not worried. Sit there and twiddle your life for some, for all I care.
Sir, is something wrong?
Well, what?
I thought I heard you call.
No, I didn't call anyone.
I see.
Wait. May I borrow this book?
Certainly, sir. Fill out this card, please. Here's a pen, sir.
And the ink?
You can use this bottle.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, my God.
What happened, sir?
I'm sorry. I'm afraid I was clumsy. The ink bottle is broken on the floor. Let me pay for it, please, and I'll make the card out in pencil. There was no use telling her the truth. The librarian would have called for a policeman, but the plain fact was Ariane, my unwanted sweetheart, had deliberately pushed my arm so that I upset the ink bottle. Oh, she was a clever one. For some reason, she didn't want me to read that account about Ahab's trial. But whether she liked it or not, I was getting the facts, and Ariane could go hang.
John?
Oh, hello, Edna.
When did you get home?
We got home about 2 hours ago.
We?
I mean, I did. Edna, look here. I've uncovered a clue. I've been reading an account in this book about a murder trial some 90 years ago. The trial of a man named Ahab, Edna. And you know who his victim was.
Who, dear?
Ariane.
I see.
No, you don't see. I haven't explained it yet. Will you listen, please?
Of course, John.
Ahab Coulter was an artist and a frustrated one. According to the court records, his work rarely sold. He was subject to fits of anger and depression.
And who was Ariane?
His model, his only model. And she was madly in love with him, but he imagined she was leaving him for another man. And he strangled her.
How awful.
Well, he was clever about hiding her body. It was months before he was apprehended by the police. When they finally caught up with him, purely his own fault, he'd gone out of his mind. And in his rantings, he admitted his guilt.
I don't want to hear any more.
But you must hear the rest. It's the most important part. When they arrested him, Edna, he was standing in front of a portrait of Ariane that he had painted, the portrait that I now own, Edna.
Yes?
Ahab had a knife in his hand, and he was about to stab the portrait through the heart. During the trial, he said over and over again that the woman was trying to drive him crazy, even in death, and that the only way he could get rid of her was by murdering her portrait.
Murdering her portrait?
He never got a chance to do it, however. He was imprisoned in jail for the criminally insane, where he died. And Edna?
Well?
There's an old woodcut here, look, in the book. A picture of Ahab Coulter. Look at him,
John.
Edna. Look at him. He resembles me.
Where are you going, John?
To the kitchen.
John, wait! What are you doing with that bread knife,
Get
John?
Out of my way, Edna.
John, no.
Get out of my way!
You're not going into the study.
Yes.
Now listen to me. You've got to listen.
Well?
It's been a week now.
A week?
Since we made our bargain.
What bargain?
You said you'd consult with Dr. Richardson in 1 week's time.
I said... Oh, I did say that, didn't I? All right, call him, Edna.
Oh, John, may I?
Yeah, I'll see him tomorrow. Meanwhile, I'm going to finish what Ahab Coulter started to do. I locked myself inside the study and opened the closet door. I removed the painting of Ariane and stood it against the wall on the couch. For a moment, I studied it, its lovely features and terror-ridden eyes. And then, for the last time, I heard it laugh. The laughter rang out like a terrible curse, and I hesitated for a moment, frightened. Then I raised my hand and plunged the knife through the portrait just where the heart... That was several months ago. Since then, well, I've been convinced that it was all one gigantic hallucination. Dr. Richard explained it to me while he treated me for a nervous breakdown and sent me away for a brief rest. He said it all started at the seance, which was undoubtedly a fraud. Ariane's voice at that time was a hoax that both my wife and I could hear. But everything else from that point on was merely a product of my imagination. You see, I was the only one who heard and felt and, well, the thing after the seance. Edna saw and heard absolutely nothing. So it was my own overworked brain that had manufactured the entire episode. Well, so much for that. It was an experience that never happened. And it's all in the past. I'm better now. Feeling fit. Nothing will ever bother me again. There's only one thing that puzzles me, however. Why is it that sometimes I can still detect the odor of jasmine?
Chase was created and written for the National Broadcasting Company by Lawrence Klee.
The Chase, on Tuned to Yesterday from November 16th, 1952 on NBC. And that wraps up this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.